Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Don't Worry, Be Happy show. This show strives to give you a little mental break from life, day-to-day, stinking thinking, uncomfortable situations, negative news, and just bad stuff. We're going to continue with part two of my chit-chat with Ciccini, an interview I did with Sister Rose Marie Ciccini, who is leaving the Gallup, New Mexico area to retire in California. She was a volunteer, a nun, a really good person, and I got some of her thoughts on her works and her more than 27 years of working in Gallup, New Mexico, trying to help the poor and underprivileged and people who are struggling. So we will continue with her interview. So let's start the show like we usually do, making sure our minds are in a good space. We're going to do some breathing. First, make sure there isn't any tension in the body. Make sure your shoulders aren't in your ears. Make sure you're not holding any tension in your booty or in your hands or face. Relax. On the count of three, we're going to take a cleansing breath in through our nose, and then we're going to blow out through our lips. When you breathe in something positive. Think good thoughts, and when you blow out all the negativity inside you and protect yourself with love, happiness, and peace. Yeah, it's worth a try. You ready? One, two, three. Remember, you're human. This is just a gentle reminder that you matter. And you can control your reactions. Despite if negativity is coming towards you, you have your tools of goodness and positivity near you. It could be your faith. It could be the blessings in your life. It could be your family. It could be your passions. But something in your life is positive. Something in your life is good. And just focus on that. Be present in the moment. Say please and thank you. Do the best you can. And enjoy this interview or this talk with Rose Marie Ciccini as she says goodbye to the Gallup, New Mexico area.
If we really realized that this love is a love that has no beginning and no end, and somehow is manifesting that goodness through all of creation, and I am a unique embodiment of that love. So it kind of puts you back to the reason why you're on this planet in the first place. And then by doing that, it kind of clears everything out. Now, the rest of it is, I find that you need to have people who share your vision, who share your deepest values, whether that's one person or two people. But for example, we have started a little Active Hope group in Gallup, and a group of us meet in a friend's home. But we started with Jane, the Active Hope, I'm thinking of Jane Goodall, but the other author is, anyway, we started with this book because we all had this sense of what's happening to, you know, our community, what's happening to our country, what's happening to our world. And we started with that book, which dealt with all those issues and yet called us forth in hope because of the larger whole, because of the love that is infused in everything that is a part of our world. And yet we are not seeing it. We're mistreating one another. We're disrespecting. We're creating division. We're creating hatred. We need our guns. We have to carry these guns in public places. You know, it's all this hype. You know, is it fear? Is it
frustration,
despair? But that's the environment that's being created in our country now. We see it much more blatantly.
My mother's generation and her mother, my grandmother's generation, were taught how to deal with frustration. Some of them have their religion. Some mm-hmm. of them just believe in hard work. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to be frustrated if you're tired from breaking your back from the fields all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have more time that we can get frustrated, and then therefore we don't know how to channel the frustration into art or into exercise or something. I don't know if we're teaching our young people how to deal with frustration or how to deal with inner turmoil without being physical. I know there's no quick bullet or a quick answer, but when you see a person getting aggressive with someone so quickly about a person living a way that you don't like the way, you know, why are we so invested in other people's lives? We can't even control our own lives. Why is so much hatred or frustration on trying to control the person next to you when, you know, my frustration is, you know, I see my son being frustrated because there's so much he wants to do and he doesn't know how to express it. And I wondered how, and he even wonders how I dealt with it. And I'm like, well, you know, this is how I did it. I don't know if we need classes on how to deal with frustration, or is there classes on frustration? Is religion or having a spiritual side helping you deal with frustration better? It does seem like if you have a wider view of the world, and then you can see how it breaks down things that you say, oh, okay. But is there a way that in this time and age that we can package it better for people to understand it, to make them understand that you're not mad at the problem you see, you're mad because there's something inside of you that you need to be fixed. They talked about self-care. Maybe we could tie self-care into the environment, because if you're not in a place that is basic and pure and more natural, maybe that is affecting you so you aren't as frustrated. What I'm asking you is, do you see that, do we have the modern tools to help us not kill each other with pollution or violence or angry words? Do you have hope in the fact that we will find it? Or do you feel that patience in ourselves is a tool that we get for patience for other people? You are such a good, I can feel your positive energy just talking. I can sit here and listen to you for hours. And I wonder, how do you do it? How do you keep that peace? And can you leave a little bit here in Gallup before you leave? Because I would buy it and I would keep it to myself. I love talking to you. The fact that you've picked pieces of poetry and readings, what is your secret? And do we all have to become, sisters to get that piece? Do you find it that you've had it all along, or it's something you developed? I mean, you've been on this path for years and years. It's like 30 years you've started on this path, and then 20 more.
67.
60, and you're still 67. Going strong. You haven't. I mean, you have had moments of doubt, and how do you shake it off and keep going?
You know, I'm thinking of an image right now, because I've had to balance, being very grounded in what is meaningful, life-giving, inspiring, hope-giving in my own life, and at the same time responding to a wide range of not only local or state, but national and international issues. So I think of the image of a tree, because the tree does have this root system, but as we know now, they're finding that trees' root system are reaching out to other trees, and underground, these roots are communicating with the roots of other trees. Mm-hmm. And we see we are the individual growing out, and the trunk is manifesting, our being. And I think that the idea of knowing who we are is a ongoing discovery, to really appreciate that we're called to something far greater than just you know, whatever we thought our life was about, that it is very profoundly meaningful in a world, but also in the universe. Okay. And so in prayer, however you do it, take the time to let that trunk rise up, because that's where your nutrition is coming from, but also from the environment around. So the branches are coming out, and those are, you know, our various life directions, and foliage comes out, and, you know, we have the seasons, the springtime where there's hope, and then there's the, you know, the summer fullness, you know, and then the autumn harvest, we see results, and then there's winter where it's absolutely death, and you go through experiences where you're stripped, totally stripped, the loss of a loved one, the suffering that you might have, illnesses, psychological, mental, whatever, you know, betrayals. Yeah. But those are death moments. We are experiencing death within life, you know. So what I'm thinking is that all of that is creating the unique who we are, which is never repeatable in this universe. And it's contributing something to this ongoing manifestation of divine love. And so then the idea that we can't do it alone. See, so I do this prayer and, you know, all that. And then I come, I would come to the office, and all these issues are on this, you know, how I can't respond to every single appeal that comes, and every day, you know, hundreds and hundreds. So the idea is what I do, and I get them, I signed up at some point like 40 years ago to different organizations, and I still get their literature. So I can't, if I were to give a contribution, I'd be homeless. I'd be out, you know, looking for a shelter. You know, there's no way. So what I've done is say how wonderful that this group of people who are connected in a network are working on this issue, whether it's Alaska, whether it's the polar bear, whether it's the poor whales. That, and even now, I understand some hunters are dynamiting the dens of bears. I mean, there's such violence being expressed by humans, and they're killing off the some of the wolves in Yosemite National Park. And they were reintroduced to bring a ecological balance, because the elk and the deer were eating all the new growth of trees, and they were over, you know, they were destroying what needed, you know, they needed less and more time to grow for other vegetation, you know, for the environment. But anyway, there, and you see those examples of hatred, and I say, what is it in that human person that requires the killing of a bear, or the killing of that wolf?
Or the violence in
the
general.
Violence of even, you know.
It seems like
what is it? This is the sickness.
Violence.
See, this is, look at it as, you know, you go to a hospital, and yes, you understand people are here because they have these various forms of illnesses. Some are minor, but some are severe.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to look at that as another evidence of whatever this malady, whatever this disease is. And I almost say a prayer for that person, whoever did that.
I never thought of that.
And I'm kind of putting it in the hole. It's not that I'm going to respond to everything that's going on in the world, because I have to be there and I have to do it. But I'm part of a huge body of people who are being led, like myself, to put love forth for the sake not only of our human species, but for our fellow creatures who are our relatives. For the environment, for the trees, for the plants, and we're finding out how intelligent, you know, the trees, the plants are.
I'm so sorry. I'm making you talk so
no,
much.
No, that's okay. I hope you cut that out. No, that's for you.
Can I ask you a question?
Did I make it clear that you got to build that trunk of the tree out of this underground web that you're connected with? And it's global. If you can see all these networks that are working, and an energy force that is for the planet, for the life of the whole planet.
Can I ask you a sincere question? When on my show, I'll always say, when I have a guest, when you're having a really, really bad day, what's the one thing you close your eyes and think about that always brings a smile to your face? But one thing you were just mentioning is when someone, you're experiencing someone who's either violent or very, or they're just being nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
You would probably say a prayer for that person.
I see there that action is out of a place of deep woundedness. I guess that's the point I'm making. There's deep woundedness in people, and we talk about healing. We, you know, the hospital is a great place for healing, but the whole idea of what we see, you know, in our society, in our world, through the wars, whatever is happening, deep human woundedness that is manifesting in these manifestations, you know, of hate, mm-hmm. divisiveness, of, you know, we can't even talk about our history where we did this as a country, enslave people, or we had practices of genocide against these native people so that we could clear them off the land and take
it. You understand.
Yeah, this is woundedness. This is sick.
Yeah, but
this is sick.
But now that we have awareness that people are saying, yes, we did that, but we don't want you talking about that because it makes us feel bad.
Okay, so, there is a place of such shallowness, so shallowness that truth cannot enter. Truth is not welcome.
That is good.
To take in truth means you have to have a strong heart to hear it and take it in. And that's where love is. That's the eyes of the heart.
To live a life of truth.
You have to live from the heart. You know, we have a lot of education in the head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get into cultures where it's all, you know, these are, you know, success is determined by these criteria. Mm-hmm. And you may give yourself totally to that. But what's happening to the heart force? Even the Tibetan monks talked about a heart force. Mm-hmm. I remember reading some of the material in Nepal that they believe your heart has a power to manifest, to project energy that is influential.
Is it hard, though, to wish well or pray for someone and you're hurting inside yourself?
Yes, very hard.
So I remember there was a young, a beautiful woman a long time ago. Her name was Nella Vindstrom, and she said, you know you have grace when you're able to truly pray for someone and truly wish them well, even though they've only done mean things to you. And I thought, how do you get to that part that someone who's been very horrible to you, mm-hmm. and you really, truly mean them well? And she said, well, that's where grace comes in. And she was a beautiful woman. But I always wondered, is that a superpower?
Well,
is that magic?
But we have that example in Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., because he was such a force for love and for goodness and for reconciliation. He ejected such a power. And the whole idea in the peace movement is, if you are able to forgive, even though you're hurting, mm-hmm. you are no longer under the influence of the violence that was done to you. Because when you harbor that and let it fester, you are unfree. You're allowing the perpetrator of that violence, however you were hurt, to remain in a way that is festering, eating away, causing you anxiety, you know, feelings of rage or anger. Mm-hmm. But that is a form of being held in that energy. And by being able to let it go and say, yes, I'm hurting, and I still remember what was done that was so, so injurious to mm-hmm. me and hurtful, but I will not allow that to have any influence or to remain in my heart, in my spirit. And that's what Martin Luther King Jr. did.
And
he wasn't perfect.
He wasn't perfect.
He was a human being with
exactly.
all the, but he, you know, just his, you know, even his photograph, he emanated that idea of heart force, mm-hmm. soul force, even soul force. That's another word they use. Heart force, soul force. It means you're coming out of the spiritual dimension of everything. In every act, there is not just the surface materials that we see. There is the spiritual energy there. Now that energy may be coming in a negative way toward me, mm-hmm. but I can meet it
with an energy force that I have, and I can, in a way, transform that so that it does not impact me in a negative way. And that's when the choosing of nonviolent, in fact, they do, even some in the peace movement, take a vow of nonviolence. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, even in our daily life, we renounce the violence. Mm-hmm. And we let it go, and by doing that, you lessen the violence in the environment.
That's hard.
And it's hard to do.
Because, my reaction is defend. Yeah. And to be able to be open and to to channel someone's negativity towards me and try to turn it around to be positive, that takes thought and effort and patience. Because as an animal, I'm naturally going to try to defend.
Of course. But, you know, it doesn't mean we take abuse.
Yes.
You have to stand up. I know that I am a person of dignity, God-given rights and dignity. I will not accept that. You know, but I respond to it in a way that does not simply mirror the violence that was done to me. Mm-hmm. However it is, and that's where we have to be creative. Mm-hmm. It's like this, you know, creative nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I love about there's one passage in Matthew where Jesus says, you know, if someone strikes you, you know, turn your cheek. And it always troubled me. And I did a workshop with Walter Wink, who was a very, very well-known Protestant theologian. He did a workshop at Marino. And I asked about that, and he said, you know, we have to understand Jesus was within the culture and understood that the slap is done with the right hand to the cheek of the person. Like, if I were to go, that would be on the right. Now, if you were to turn your head, I can't slap you.
That makes sense.
And what he says you have to remember is Jesus said that to put the person off balance, so they have to reflect on the next action.
Exactly.
And give them an opportunity to rethink what they're doing.
So you're it, not making it easy for them to hit you again.
They have to recalibrate. And then the other thing, when you go an extra mile, when they give you a burden, go an extra mile. Mm-hmm. There was a Roman law at that time in Israel that the Roman soldiers would call upon the peasants, the people, to carry their heavy loads. Mm-hmm. And they would only go a mile. And if they had them go further, there was a very strict punishment to the soldier. So if, you insist, I want to go more, you know, I'm going to take this further. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this would be in context of their military unit, whatever, that there would be a severe penalty for exceeding that law on the military, the military person. But see, again, Jesus is saying you're putting them in a position where they have to rethink. They can't just react from the impulse of anger, how we see many people acting today, immediately insulting, immediately derogatory, immediately lashing out.
Yeah.
These are the people we're somehow engaging, if we're engaged with them, getting them to stop and realize, no, I don't accept that. You know, we have to look at this a different way. Or I'm moving out of this scene.
But you have to say the person, the victim, or the person's being oppressed has to be quick-witted or quick-thinking.
And not accept. You can't be, docile, means. No.
You've got to be actually present in the moment to be able to make the best kind of reaction.
Yes.
That's not going to feed that person.
Right.
Some of us who are kind of slow in the morning will be able to see.
Yeah.
But it would be good to be present of mind. Can't be on your earphones or your cell phone. You got to be aware. So if someone attacks you, you can get yourself out of the situation the best way you can. Against violence.
Violence, just generating and increasing violence. The cycle of violence. Yeah.
That's, so if the person pulls out a gun, you're saying don't pull out a bigger gun. Try to...
Have you had someone pull out a gun?
I've had people show On my travels, I've had people, for a while there, it seemed like I was being pulled over by law enforcement at least once a month for visiting different patients and until the good thing about being a healthcare professional, I've had so many patients who have had different walks of life, and they'll ask me, well, how are you coming? And you come, I'll tell them my experience. Well, enough patients realize, wait a minute, you're doing this care for me or my loved one, and you're being bothered by this person. In small towns, everyone knows everybody.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait a minute, I know that person.
Good.
Why are they harassing you?
Good.
And one thing leads to another, and it comes out if things work out themselves.
Yeah.
And but it's sad that I have to build a rapport with certain people for me to be not protected.
Yeah.
But, there's consequences because they just see a black person.
Yes.
They don't really care if I'm not doing anything or I've never committed a crime. It's just an easy mark.
Yeah.
I want to feel good about myself, so let's pick on this black person. I had this one gentleman who I was a patient, and he asked me about me, blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned, I got pulled over, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, well, things like that happen. Just let it roll off your back. And the next day I was driving home and I had stopped over at a store. And I got a cappuccino or something like that. And I came out of the store and I'm driving and the police pulled me over for whatever reasons. So I pulled over and I know the routine and the window came down and it was the patient I had the night before. And he went, oh no. I says, what? He says, you're gonna put me into all your stories. I says, well, he says, I didn't know you were black. I just saw that you pulled out of the parking lot and you didn't have your lights on.
And at night?
Yes, it was like early morning. Uh-huh. And I said, and? He says, well, we know if a person starts their car and they pull out without putting their lights on first, usually they're drunk or something. Oh, I don't know, he made something up.
Yeah.
And I just looked at him, I'm like, really?
Really?
He's like, fine, you got me. He says, I just leave. I mean, he says, just add me to your collection. And he said, I said, well, I have to. He says, but really, I didn't know that you were black, kind of. And I looked at him and was like, really? He says, well, yes, but I didn't recognize your car. I knew you weren't a local. And he just fumbled over his words.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I just think that you'll go down as being part of, I said, I'll never mention your name. But he was just so upset because in his mind, that would never happen to me. I would, And then he was caught.
Yeah. Oh, what an example.
And it was, it was,
that's
funny
what we act out.
He never saw himself as being one of those.
No.
Because, he said, oh, I'm sure you did something. You said something, or you swerved, or did something.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. No. I pulled out of a parking lot. And I usually flip on my TomTom and my lights, but it wasn't in a weird way.
Yeah.
He pulled me over. And he was just so upset when he saw my face. He's like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be added to the list of stories. And
I think that's...
Hopefully that makes him think. But what's probably going to happen is it'll make him think a week or two, maybe a month later, and then he'll go back to his old habits.
Well,
because human nature...
Well, you have to let it go. See, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
You have to let it go. You did what you needed to do to bring a little more truth to this situation.
Mm-hmm.
You clarified it for him, and it's up to him what he does with that.
Yeah.
You can't be responsible.
No, no. He had an opportunity to look at his life and reflect and say, I did do something that
you
wasn't.
You did,
And I am part of the problem. But in his mind, he probably think that was a one-off. That, he probably, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't.
Yeah.
There is a question I do have. If a person listened to this segment and they're new to Gallup, could you list things that they could maybe volunteer or meetings they could go to if they do want to be part of the community for good or do something positive? Are there, in your mind, can you rattle off some names of committees or groups that are meeting that you think would benefit a person who's new to the area, or maybe someone who has lived here for a while and they would like to get involved in a forward moving group of people?
Well, of course, we're always welcome. Anyone who would like to do, you know, volunteer work here at Catholic Charities, or people who bring things that need to be sorted that are made available, you know, for people who are in need, that would be a big help. And of course, our community pantry. You know, I remember, you know, that whole, you know, community pantry being built, and with the wonderful hothouses and the vegetables being grown there. So that would be a wonderful place just to learn, you know, how many people are being helped in McKinley County, you know, through that program. And that would be very helpful. And I know the Missionaries of Charity, who serve a hot meal for those who are unsheltered every day, except Thursday, I believe. But they would welcome, you know, volunteer help to prepare the food and the meal, and then help serve it, and that would be very helpful.
Wednesdays, they take the beds apart, and they scrub the beds.
Oh.
So they're always looking for strong people to help
good.
Clean the beds.
Oh, that would be great. That would be wonderful. And let's see. I was thinking of another.
The solar community, Gallup Community Solar.
Oh, yes. Everyone is invited to Gallup Solar, which now meets in person every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. And if you're interested in learning about solar and how, you know, this wonderful movement is reaching out, you know, throughout this area for the past 14 years, you know, you would make some good friends there. And some good news about our Gallup Solar Program. This is the sixth team every year through the grant that has been very generously given to us through Good Day, Ramey Good Day Fund. We at Gallup Solar have been able to provide a 12-volt solar system complete with an energy-efficient small refrigerator to households on Navajo land who have not had any electricity. And the people who sign up for the training go through a period of courses, and then after completion of that, they are guided in wiring the system up, and then they are also assisted with some of the graduates of the program who will go to the site where they install the PV system for a family on Navajo land. So it's all very well monitored and supervised, so people really learn along the way. And the latest exciting thing is that we are presently in the seventh team, and this team seven is made up of 11 high school students at Sayagai High School.
Aww.
In you know, Pueblo Bonito, near that area. And they are learning this class with the assistance of a science teacher who's mentoring them in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being done through the team meetings, that process, or that particular app on the computer. So the lessons are projected onto the screen in the high school during the class period. And the introduction and explanation is done of those lessons. And then the follow-up class is with the teacher in their classroom, who go over that lesson and also have homework related to that. And one of their homeworks is to locate, either decide whether it will be a family member or a relative or someone they know who has no electricity in their home, where they will go and install that system with supervision. So
We're
very excited.
Some really good skills.
Yes.
Maybe,
yes.
Maybe hopefully they'll be able to have classes.
Yes.
In town, that would be nice.
Right.
For kids to volunteer with.
That, yes. Well, they can come to Gallup Solar and learn how they may want to be in a future class, a future team. So that would be, you know, that would be interesting. And you'll meet some very fascinating, wonderful people there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. I know you're retiring, but knowing the type of person you are, you're not really going to retire. So what projects do you think you'll put your toe in the future once you're settled in California?
Well, I'm really going to be part of a Marinal community, Marinal Sisters in Monrovia, California. And interestingly, our property is of 7 acres. It's right at the foot of San Gabriel Mountains in the community of Monrovia, and it's the largest green space in that community. It's very interesting. And what is happening is there's a whole movement, as there is here, of return to the land. Mm-hmm. And so in California, where you've seen all these lawns and green grasses, that well, people are now removing the grasses and they're growing, you know, indigenous plants or indigenous trees to attract moisture. And they're also starting to do more growing of vegetables in their land, in their gardens. So this movement started with some women in our neighborhood in Monrovia called, they called it Monrovia Grow. And it started during the COVID period when people were so isolated. Two women in the neighborhood thought it would be good just to work in the garden and do something about regenerating the soil and getting some growing vegetables in. So people were attracted to this little group. And of course, after COVID, they have grown considerably. And now they have gotten donations of wonderful trees, indigenous trees to California, indigenous plants, and they had no place to place them. So all of these trees and plants are now a nursery on our property. So you have all this lovely new green, you know, being distributed out to people that want to do more of that in their gardens. Then they're also holding workshops about how to regenerate soil. And we ourselves, through the help of Grow Monrovia, have removed all the grass. And they do the soil wells and the burns so that there's better water catchment and water channeling when it rains. And there's going to be long-range plans to put in solar. And a lot of emphasis on catching any rainwater whatsoever. So that has to be done, you know, the water catchment and cisterns and all that. So it sounds like there's a lot of interest and a lot of activity in this part. In fact, the City Council of Monrovia has, they've also indicated kind of an encouragement that people participate in this, you know, return to earth activity that's going on there on our property. So it, you know, people are coming in and you know, finding
I hope
this
something like that happens here.
Could happen here.
I've always wanted to have some little bit of land right outside Gallup where people can, like the Work and Beauty.
Work and Beauty do,
But something bigger. Something outside that people can go and work and, and grow things and then, you know, have some place to... I've tried gardening. Kitty Bell used to try to help me to garden and she had the touch. I did not. I can probably grow up to about 2 inches and then it just dies.
Well, you know, another thing I'd like to mention is by all means visit Spirit Farm. It is down on 602. And you come to, let's see, it's the directions, Route 9, I think it is. But you go past, you know, where the Kiwanis Camp sign is. Look for the Kiwanis Camp sign about 17 miles south. And then take a right at that. And then you go straight in and you go directly into Spirit Farm. But that would be a place near us where you get this sense of how this return to the soil and growing movement is flourishing, and it would
do
be an inspiration. They do have
people,
tours.
Do they,
Yeah, they
Should
do.
You call ahead of time. Though?
Call them. Go to the go to work. Go to Spirit Farm Covenant Pathways. Go on their website, and all the information is there. But we did go recently, about 3 weeks ago, and it was awesome. Just awesome to see what they're doing. They have you know, the pigs and the chickens and sheep, and I bet they would take volunteers down there.
There you go.
Yeah, awesome. It would be a real experience. And they're doing something very innovative. They're doing biochar, which was discovered in the Amazon. Evidently, this charcoal is used by indigenous people in the Amazon region being introduced back into the soil, and you continue composting, as James Gate mentioned, you continue your enrichment through composting for 3 years. But after 3 years, there's sufficient nourishment in the microbes and organisms that form and are nurtured by that charcoal where you never have to do composting again on the land.
Oh, wow, really?
And they're doing that in Spirit Farm. It would be fascinating.
Oh, I'd
to
definitely
see that.
Like to, yeah. If they had a lecture or something.
Yeah. And they're having, oh, they are having one at Manuelito Wednesday. This Wednesday, it just came on my internet that they're doing a soil enrichment workshop in Manuelito.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right here on our outskirts, yeah.
Well, do you have a Facebook or Instagram so when you do leave, people can keep in contact and see how you're doing? Or the community that you're moving to, will they have access so we can listen or see how you're doing?
Well, I have my email, which mm-hmm. I can give, and I don't have a Facebook. I don't do Facebook.
Okay.
But if you want to look at something that's going on, look at Grow Monrovia. They have a website, and they have a feature article on what has been done on our property. And it shows the sisters. You'll see all the sisters there and how they're taking part in these workshops and working on the land and everything.
Okay.
So,
because we would like to check up on
yeah.
you.
So oh, hopefully, by all means.
Yes,
by all means.
So definitely. I always ask, there's one other question that a listener asked me to ask you, if we have time. In your opinion, I guess it's a parable, when two brothers are raised in the same home and under the same values, what do you feel affects the brothers that they grow completely different? One grows to be kind and productive, and the other one grows up to be not so kind and not so productive. Are you one of those people that think that nature or nurture outside influences them, or do you think the way that they're built or mentally, how would you take that situation? Or just pray for them both and call it a day?
Well, I think that the whole idea of our evolution, we've got to remember that we are continually evolving, and that in the daily choices that we make, we are fashioning our future. Mm-hmm. And so we can have the same kind of nurturing, hopefully, you know, from our parents. But again, how we individually respond, you know, how we take advantage of opportunities, how we overcome difficulties, those are all very individual choices that each one of us makes.
Mm-hmm.
And where no one is identical. And even God
raised in the same household, same family, same everything.
Yes, yes. Because there is that element that even God respects, which is our freedom of choice.
Free will.
Mm-hmm. And we see this, you know, in our families. You know, there are situations where you see people taking a very different course, very different way. And there are choices that are made individually in a very different way along the way.
Hmm.
So nurture and nature, I think they're both involved, you know. We have the same, you may have the same DNA, but even identical twins, they say, have variations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the element of mystery, this is, you know, we can't pin God down. And we like to do that. I think the patriarchal religion would like to have us believe that God is sitting up there, you know, watching our every thought and mm-hmm. judging us, and it's all going to add up. And boy, if we don't do it right, you know, we're in trouble. You know, and yet we're in this overflowing love. This is continually nurturing, sustaining, and alluring us into the future with possibilities for greater wholeness. God is ever evolving into wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not static. So I think, you talked about engaging individually, and that happens very much in the home, how we engage individually in our moments of choosing. And it could be a mistake, even, you know, after talking and consulting, and then a choice is made and there's some big fiasco or something happened. But even that is a learning. is a learning for life.
Okay. Well, thank you for
that. So I think life is very open-ended in our choosing, and we are really creating the path by walking.
Oh, and some of us will try to continue that positive path, but it's very hard. It's very, very hard. It's so much easier to be lazy.
I know, isn't it? Isn't
it? Do you have any last words to people who are listening, if you want to say goodbye now, or any, you know, well-wishing, or see you later, or Gaylor, or whatever, that you have to say to the people of Gallup and the surrounding area?
Well, it's, as I said, a very, very great gift and blessing that I have from, you know, life with all whom I have encountered and known here in Gallup. And so it is with a heart that is very full of gratitude. I think there is no relationship or meeting that is not in a way influencing us in one way or another. And I do have such grateful memories of everyone I have been sharing life with, and each one has a sacred life journey. So even the fact that our lives have converged is part of a giftedness of the love that holds us all together in oneness. And I guess the deepest thought is we are all born out of a love that is so great. And each one, I think, reflects in a very different way, you know, facets of the one love that is continually nurturing, sustaining, carrying us into the future, that is always one that is, you know, for greater fullness, greater in importance, and greater meaning mm-hmm. in why we are here together. So I just have a sense that each person has been a blessing. And even in experiences that may not have been very, you know, pleasant at the moment, you know, even in those occasions, we have gifted each other for growth.
That's so sweet. I appreciate
but
that.
But it's with great gratitude. And of course, I believe that once we're entangled in relationship in this wonderful universe, the quantum entanglement means that we're all intertwined. We're not really separate. So in the fact that we have been together and experienced one another in different ways, that we carry that all with us mm-hmm. as we go to someplace new. So I'll hold all of that and be sending a lot of love energy, all as much as I can muster, I'll be sending and remembering with gratitude everyone who's blessed me in our lives shared together here in this wonderful place of Gallup and McKinley County and on beautiful Navajo land.
And trains.
And the trains.
And the trains.
So life is a journey. The train continues to remind us.
Yes.
We're always moving forward.
Yeah. And sometimes we just sit still.
Sometimes we have to wait a while as the train's here. Exactly. Sit for a while.
Okay, my last corny question. When you're having a bad day, which I know with you, you probably find always something good in the bad day. What's the one thing you can close your eyes and think about that makes you smile or laugh or giggle or makes you happy?
Well, you know, I have found great consolation in the beauty of Earth in this area. And I think of the sandstone petrified mesas. You know, those were sand dunes that were created when this entire area was an alluvial ocean, and strong winds as the ocean waters receded and, you know, the continents divided up, the winds were so powerful, they blew that sand into dunes. And that's what we're seeing here. These are the sand dunes that were petrified from billions of years ago when this was covered as an ocean. And I look at the sky, which reminds me that we're living in a marvelous love-infused universe. And the sun is always faithful. The sun is holding our Earth in this wonderful attraction union bonding. And to me, it's a sign of the covenant of God's faithfulness. I always think of the sun and the moon, you know, the sun especially mm-hmm. holding all the planets, but especially our Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise we'd be flying out into outer space, you know. So that bond of attraction, union, bonding between the sun and Mother Earth is another powerful sign, or even a word of God, of God's covenant faithfulness to each one of us.
You're such a learned person. I appreciate you, and I appreciate the time. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And be careful out there. And like I said, if there's a way you could drop us an email here and there so we know how you're doing. And we definitely will check out the name of the community that you'll be going to again.
Yes, Mary Knoll, MaryKnoll. Mary Knoll Sisters.
Well, thank you again, and continue being you.
You're listening to KGLP Gallup. A slight breeze blows through the backyard at Melissa Rose's house in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
I'm from Haudenosaunee territory. I'm Gunyukahaga, and my clan is Wagatatkioni, Wolf Clan. My community is called Okwesasne. It's on the border of New York and Canada. I'm a home birth midwife. I attend births in people's homes, out of hospital environments. And the other side of that is support for pregnancy, loss, or termination.
In the last year, she has been learning about medicinal plants for self-managed abortions.
Self-managed abortion is traditional. It's the first abortion that's ever happened on the earth.
Rose says Indigenous women are seeking her help.
In this political climate, a lot of us have turned to traditional medicine and plant use.
Before Western medicine was forced on Native women, they knew what plants managed menstrual cycles, prevented pregnancies, and induced abortions.
We've only been a handful of generations separated from this being the norm for our families. And so it's only been a handful of generations that have not been able to talk about this in some places. And in some families, this knowledge has been really carefully protected and passed down.
Rose is protecting this knowledge too, and I'm not asking for any specifics. She says Native women sometimes choose traditional medicine because for them, staying at home can be safer than seeing a Western provider.
It can be purely by choice that a person decides they don't want to be in a colonial institution where typically our bodies are not safe because of institutional racism and provider bias.
For centuries, Indigenous people faced genocide and assimilation. When that didn't work, other tactics were used. Studies show that Native women were forcibly sterilized from the 1930s through the 1970s. One government report found over 3,000 sterilizations occurred between 1973 and 1976 alone. I am a Diné woman and an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation. I was born in a hospital run by the Indian Health Service and have gone to its facilities all my life. Until recently, I was unaware that abortion care is not readily available there.
I do have a very loud laugh, though. A very loud auntie laugh.
This is Rachel Lorenzo. That auntie status comes from the hundreds of Native people Lorenzo has helped through Indigenous Women Rising. The organization, which Lorenzo co-founded, has an abortion fund solely for Indigenous women. Lorenzo is Mescalero Apache, Laguna Pueblo, and Chicana. The 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision made abortion access constitutional, but it had no effect in Indian country.
It was crumbs compared to what the Supreme Court could have done from a legal perspective, that it was never enough, especially for Indigenous people who rely on Indian health services.
While Roe protected a federal right to abortion, low-income, Black, and Indigenous people still had trouble accessing it.
A few years after Roe v. Wade, there was the Hyde Amendment,
which banned use of federal funds for any abortion, except if the pregnancy is the result of
rape, incest,
or if the life of a woman is at risk.
In Indian country, on reservations, there's already very limited law enforcement, social services. A lot of Native people have to drive pretty far to get health care in general.
Even though the Hyde Amendment wasn't aimed at Native people, it has a massive effect on them.
Now, white folks in particular are starting to experience the same or very similar treatment that Indigenous people have been facing when it comes to abortion care.
As America grapples with the reversal of Roe v. Wade, Indigenous women are taking matters into their own hands to help their sisters and to restore bodily sovereignty. They've set up support networks and are reclaiming traditional knowledge about reproductive health, including traditional birthing practices.
We've always known that the community is really the only thing that is protecting us and that will find a way, because it's made up of us. And so we'll find ways to make sure that we get the health care that we need.
That's Sarah Adams, who is Choctaw and co-founder of Matriarch. The nonprofit in Oklahoma helps Native women with resources as they seek abortion services.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
At Indigenous Women Rising's office in Albuquerque, New Mexico, requests for help are coming from states that have tightened restrictions on or banned abortion.
We're investing more money into travel like airfare, bus, gas, childcare, elder care, aftercare for the individual who's getting an abortion.
That's Rachel Lorenzo again.
If there are special needs that they have, we do our best to fund that as well. We also fund any ceremonies, healing ceremonies that people request.
Laws, policies, and religion imposed on Native people change many dynamics within the tribes, including how tribal communities talk about reproductive health.
Abortion is such a stigmatized subject.
Jeanette Patty, who is Diné, directs the Abortion Fund at Indigenous Women Rising.
In my experience, folks don't have the ability to be curious about the subject. It can be suspicious or unsafe. Sadly, a lot of our clients do have to lie to their family members, which is really rough for them.
Corrine Sanchez is from San Ildefonso Pueblo. She is the executive director at Tewa Women United. Sanchez says, even in the event of miscarriage, women are sometimes denied the full range of reproductive health services because miscarriage can be confused for an abortion.
We advocate that people should have the highest quality of care and be able to access the care and make prior and informed decisions and not have those decisions made for them.
Tewa Women United focuses on reproductive justice, among other things. They have a program that offers doula training and birth support to families.
And I also know that tribal Indigenous communities have had access to care for themselves through their medicinal plants and medicines, birthing practices, traditions that have also been kind of taken away and we're reclaiming.
Many interviewed for the story expressed disappointment and frustration in tribal government leaders because they are not talking about abortion care.
I wish tribal leaders cared about sexual and reproductive health. We're funding people from your tribe to get abortion care. Please care about this.
We're not trying to tell you to open an abortion clinic. We're not trying to tell you to like start your own fund. We're just providing the information to you. We feel like it's important for us to at least tell you that folks from your tribe are seeking this assistance. Because ultimately, too, the goal that we have is for the abortion fund to not exist.
I searched for the word abortion in Navajo law. It appears twice in hundreds of pages of text. This is what the law says. Quote, there shall be no cause of action for criminal homicide against a mother or a physician for the death of an unborn child caused by an abortion where the abortion was permitted by law and any required consent was lawfully given. End quote. Back in Melissa Rose's yard, it's one of those sunny days that paint the New Mexico sky deep blue. It gives Rose a moment to reflect. To her, abortion is
just another variation of pregnancy outcome. The whole cycle of pregnancy and every outcome is all connected.
Noelle Lynn Smith, News 21.